Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Valley Business Radio, spotlighting the Valley's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello and welcome to Valley Business Radio, where we tell the stories that traditional media tends to ignore and help connect you to the right people. I'm your host, Dr. Adrian McIntyre, and I'm joined in the studio today by Shayna Weisinger, founder and CEO of Repurpose House. Welcome, Shayna.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming in. Now, I am fascinated by what you do because this is such an important topic for so many different kinds of business owners and business leaders, whether they're solopreneurs or SVPs, C-suite executives. What we're going to talk about today goes to the heart of the way 21st century business awareness and reputation gets built. So tell us about Repurpose House. How do you serve folks?
Yeah, so essentially we take content, existing content, and turn it into social media optimized assets for Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, literally any platform, LinkedIn, anything that you can imagine putting content onto. We let entrepreneurs and businesses see the potential in the content that they already have.
And why is this important? Everybody knows, or at least says they know, that content is king and it's the currency of the internet and so on and so forth. But at the end of the day, this really is something that is critical to the way business relationships get done, the way trust and credibility gets established, the way that a reputation within an industry gets built. But how does it work? Why content, and what's the value of what you're adding to what people are already doing?
Yeah, so content, like you said, content is king. Making sure that you're consistently putting out material that help people in their business or their lives brings you or your company to a level of like an influencer in that industry. Like, people will begin to trust you to know what you're talking about if you are consistently teaching them about what you know. And that's where the value-based content really kicks in. That's like things like this, like what we're doing here, podcasts and webinars, things like that. A blog post, any kind of content that you can help somebody move forward is really, really important and will help you basically gain credibility as a business. The issue that you find there is that businesses create tons of long form content. Hopefully, if you're doing it right, right? Like, you're doing a lot of blog posts, you've got like actual long form pieces. But the problem is those aren't traditionally, they don't work well on social. They're too long. If you have a blog post with, I don't know, 2,000 words, and you know, when you post that on Facebook, first of all, you're linking out to the blog post, and Facebook doesn't want you to go anywhere other than Facebook. But also, like, it's not optimized for that platform. People don't go to Facebook to read 2,000 words. You know, they go to watch a video that's maybe 90 seconds long total. So the question becomes, like, how do you take something that you've invested time, possibly money in, and that really is chock full of amazing information, and then turn that into something that can then be viewed on social media? And really the point is to have as many touch points with your potential client base that you can get. And if you can hit them on 5 different platforms and eventually get them to your website, that's a win. And how do you make that happen without having to consistently create just like an asinine amount of new content consistently? And that's where repurposing comes in.
I think a lot of serious business leaders still have the idea that we inherited from the 1980s and 90s that the legitimate form of business content is white papers, books, speeches at significant industry events.
Sure.
And that there's a lot of the smaller, snackable, micro content, if you will, that they think might be silly. You know, I remember having grown up with technology when in the mid-2000s, a lot of the platforms that now dominate our lives were still early, were still new. And, you know, Twitter was, well, why would I share what I'm having for lunch in 140 characters was kind of the right general conversation, right? We've evolved so far beyond that, where at least in our consumption habits, you know, the latest research is what? Everybody has a smartphone within 3 to 4 feet of their body 24 hours a day, and 50 to 60% of the time spent on this device is on one of these 5, 6, 7 apps that are the layer on top of which we now communicate. Human communication hasn't changed. The channels have evolved. Maybe Twitter was onto something with the idea that 140 characters was a constraint that should be imposed. You're talking about taking something that is long and turning it into a bunch of things that are short. Talk about the evolution of this concept. How did you come to the idea that Repurpose House and the services you provide was an essential thing missing in the marketplace?
Yeah, well, we're going to make a long story a little less long. It's been an evolution, that's for sure. I have a video production company called Wake Brand Media. So I was doing all strategic video production for businesses that was digital. It didn't necessarily have to be for social media, but for like drip campaigns for their website, things like that. Maybe 4 or 5 years into it, I started to do video podcasts. And I had a handful of clients I was doing video podcasts for. I loved it because it was all give content. It was all value-based. I mean, they're basically spending an hour, maybe 45 minutes talking to other people about things that can benefit their audience, their client base, right? So I was like, this is great. One of the things that I offered in it was these little repurposed assets. So we would take up to 2 minutes of the interview that was really impactful, we'd package it up, give it the meme deal, like the big bold text on top, which statistically really helps engagement, captions, the whole deal. And it was just a part of what I offered because it was necessary. It just made sense, right? While I was going and pitching other like larger podcasters to do video, they were like, okay, yeah, we don't care about the video, but whatever you're offering with those repurposed assets, like we would do that all day long. And I heard it so many times that I was like, there's something here. So I did some research. I realized there was nobody in the marketplace doing it or doing it well, at least. I mean, there were platforms you could do it yourself, but nobody was just taking the content and repurposing it. So initially in July of 2018, I started it as podcast memes. So it was only for podcasters. It was a pre-packaged plan. And people were really excited about it. But I realized quickly after a few months, like I was beating my head against a wall because podcasters weren't necessarily the right audience because you have a lot of people who are doing it as hobbies. They don't have, they're not monetizing it, which is fine. But the people who were signing up were like, this is a no-brainer. We will pay you whatever you want to do. And I'm like, okay, what's the common denominator in those folks? And let's figure it out and market to that. Well, they were all content marketers. So it was either a business who was using podcasting as one arm of their marketing, like entire strategy, or was somebody who worked for a business who was doing that. And I was like, well, clearly we need to talk to marketers. And so I kind of reeled it back and rebranded to Repurpose House in November. And we decided to do all content, literally any content you can imagine, text, video, audio, and be able to repurpose it the way that it needs to be repurposed. And since then, it's been an easy sell because everybody knows they need to do it, just nobody has the time.
It's massively time consuming because there's so many pieces to a piece of content. There's identifying the clip. There's creating the visual overlay. There's the writing the headline that's going to go on the meme if it's one of the large font above the actual center of the image or video. There's captioning. There's adding waveforms, which is relatively easy. That's done automatically. But assembling a 90-second piece of content is something that could take somebody a couple hours if they were having to do all the things themselves, reinvent the wheel every single time. And so you've put together something that works differently. How does it work?
There's a couple of different ways that it works. The initial is like you go through your content, you pick those 90-second clips. We do up to 2 minutes. So it can be up to 2 minutes long or it can be 100 words of text because that breaks down to about 90 seconds whenever we turn it into text motion video. And we have a really seamless ticketing platform. You get assigned one person who's called your content hacker and they do your content consistently and we use the power of templates. So when you onboard, we'll create multiple templates that fit every aspect ratio. So you've got square, which is statistically the most engaging size for social media feeds. So anything you scroll with your thumb, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, you want that video or image to be square, with the exception of Twitter. Twitter now optimizes their images for landscape. So we added that to our arsenal of what you get. But so we've got the square template. You've got a story size template. So you can put that in stories for Facebook, for Instagram, IGTV now, which is really cool because if you post a longer form video to IGTV, it will put a preview on the feed. So we make sure that it's all within those constraints as well. And then we also do a landscape one for YouTube. So you can literally post the same clip across all these different platforms in different ways. And then we'll do like image quotes too. So you'll get square, landscape, story size, like a really cool quote or a stat that was mentioned in that long form piece of content. And then thumbnails for YouTube. And then if you do Facebook advertising, one way to get around all that big, bold text you were talking about, Facebook hates that. So they put a stop to it if it's over 20% of the real estate of that post. If you just add a thumbnail that has less than 20%, it slides right through. Now, I don't know if that's going to be that way forever, but currently that's the way to get around it. So we include it. And essentially, once you have all of these template sets created, you just submit tickets. And it's, here's my in and out points on my audio, or here's the in and out points on my video file. Here's the 100 words of text if it's that. And then just any info that pertains to it, like what do you want your headline to be? What do you want your image quotes to say? And then special instructions, or if it's a podcast where you have a guest on consistently, you can upload a photo of the guest and we'll swap that into your template set and submit by 5. And by 8 a.m. the next day, you have all 8 of those assets sitting in your inbox and they're ready to be posted online. Completely good to go.
I mean, this seems to me to be a direct head-on solution for the biggest pain point that a leader, somebody with ideas, somebody with practical knowledge to share faces, which is how do I package it and put it all together and distribute it? You know, people who are very successful at this are often supported by teams of people, and the cost can add up. It can become quite significant. Right. If it's a worthwhile investment, if it's moving the needle in your business. But I want to circle back to something you said earlier, which is that the larger niche of podcasters wasn't dialed in enough for your target market. I'm in a group on Facebook of professional podcast editors, and there's about 3,500, maybe closer to 4,000 editors in there now. And there's a distinct difference in the conversations that are had with podcasters who are doing it for a hobby or a passion, or it's something they love to do. It's the four drunk guys in a man cave,
right?
Kind of thing, which is awesome if they're talking about your favorite subject versus people who are podcasting as a business development tool, which doesn't make it a sales-driven podcast. It makes it very much, as you said, give content. Mm-hmm. People are happy to pay $1,000 a month or $2,000 a month for packages that to produce their business podcast are a very distinct type of business owner from the folks who are trying to get things done cheaply. What's unique about Repurpose House is you found a happy medium.
Yes.
We're not talking about $10,000 a month packages with an entire agency overhead and margins built in. But this raises a really interesting question for me, because now you've built a business that in order to compete on price is really has to be hypersensitive about your margins. How do you do it? Your typical price point, at least at the time of this broadcast, is a monthly subscription costs how much?
It can be between $279 and $479 a month.
So $300 to $500 a month.
Right.
And that gives you, depending on the package, I suppose, a certain amount of content that you can get back from the machine.
Right.
Every day.
Yes.
Right? But $500 a month is a very reasonable, very low cost price point, and the business still needs to make money. How do you do it?
So systems and processes, for sure. I have no problem proclaiming that I basically carbon copy Design Pickle's entire process. I'm good friends with the owner, Russ Perry. He's actually a Scottsdale local. And I went to the Philippines with him 2 years ago, and I was doing video production. And what I was doing was creating these testimonial videos of his full-time employees talking about how this has completely changed their life, full-time employment, benefits, getting off of work at 5 to go hang out with their family, having weekends off, and not just chasing freelance work. And as I'm filming all these testimonials, I'm getting like misty hearing about how he's changing lives out there by just really creating an amazing culture and systems and processes that allowed that business to scale. And he sat me down at one point. He's like, you need to find something scalable because video production is not it. And I was like, I feel you. So give me a second to figure it out. But yeah, essentially, like I took a lot of what he was doing. Obviously, our processes are different. We're not just graphic design. We do a lot more than that. And it's been really, really great training processes. Like making sure that our staff is totally trained before they get started is huge because we need to make sure the user experience is seamless. And, you know, we learn from our mistakes. Obviously, we're new. But as those the small mistakes happen through the beginning, we've recreated and tweaked processes to make sure that they are super smooth. We use Trainual. It's a great tool to train our staff, to keep them trained continuously, making sure that the user experience is really smooth and automated. Automation has made 90% of this possible. I mean, from the time people click sign up on the website, we have the automated flow that sends them the form that they can fill out to create their branding. Then once that's done, you can't have a person managing every step of the process. And Sarah's been a huge contributor to making sure that she's the automation queen. Thank God for her, because I could never have figured all this out on my own. But just like systems, processes, making sure we're following a timeline of workflow. And that's been really the only way. And I feel like there's other businesses who will like repurpose content like and do everything. And one of the things that I think I had to learn how to do is say no. We do one thing really, really well. Can we also post to social media and figure out your copy? We probably can, but we shouldn't, because we're really good at this one thing, but we can also send you to the people who can do those other pieces as well. So that's been one thing that for me as like an entrepreneur and having a video production company, like I can do whatever you need me to do. It was really hard to be able to be like, okay, we can, but let's see if this, is this good for the business and is this good for our clients? And to say no is hard, but it's been the right thing for sure.
I could so relate to that on a personal level, because as somebody with a bit of a geek streak and very creative mind and totally undisciplined and unruly in the way I go about executing things, my own journey as a business owner has been really uneven because of the fact that there's lots of things that I want to say yes to, sometimes because I just want people to like me and I have all the, you know, there's all the emotional stuff that we all have to figure out and grow up about, but also because there's things I want to do. And I think that would be really cool to figure out. And I'd love to sink my teeth into that and it would give me a project. And then, you know, 3 months later, when it's still not done and the client's frustrated, it's just unworkable. So the thing that I would say struggle, I don't want to be overly melodramatic about it, but it is an actual struggle for people who are passionate and creative and want to do and make things, to really hone in on what do I do well,
right,
that I can do better than others, that I can serve folks with. And that's partly how, you know, my role here at Business Radio X has evolved. This is something that is natural to me.
Yeah.
And I enjoy deeply, and it provides an extraordinary, valuable platform for business owners and business leaders in our community to leverage. I think one of the greatest opportunities available to a certain type of person, and let's dial in a little bit more on this, because I think it will be helpful for folks to know if we're talking to them or not. Someone who is a business owner with a personality. They want more visibility for themselves. They know that that's one of their strengths. A thought leader of some sort, an author, an expert, somebody who's in the advice business, a consultant perhaps, but also a business leader, a director, an executive in a larger company, to really take ownership of their own reputation, their own personal leadership brand. The biggest opportunity I see would be some combination of podcasts, guesting, plus a content machine like yours. What are your thoughts when I say this? What comes to mind?
Absolutely. The more you can be an authority figure that another person has commissioned to come and talk about something, that just increases your validity for sure. So as a guest, you know, if they're talking to you about something that you're really great at, that's a great opportunity to then repurpose that content and blast it out to the social media world consistently. Because for instance, like if it's a 30-minute podcast, at minimum, you said three things in under a minute that were pretty cool, right? So I would hope so. If not, then, you know, you're not the person we're talking about.
Right. If you could talk for 30 minutes and have no interesting things.
Right. Then,
or if you ramble too long, I got to watch out for that.
We all do.
If you ramble too long and you don't make a point, right? But if you can stick the landing.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And if you have thoughts that are interesting and you can communicate them effectively.
Yeah.
So how would that play out? Let's say that somebody listening to this is, you know, a CMO. So they know marketing already. They have a whole team of people, but they're marketing the company. Mm-hmm. They're marketing the products and services of the company. They're creating campaigns and content assets and other things. Why should somebody take ownership of their own personal leadership brand in that situation?
First of all, they're like 10 steps ahead of everybody else if they are the CMO, because they get how this works and they get how it can be really effective. One thing that I feel like larger businesses or CEOs or like C-level people in larger businesses forget is that people want to do business with people. They want to feel like there's a personality, a story, like something that's relatable as opposed to just a big brand. Some big brands can really make their brand relatable, and that's pretty impressive. But putting a face and something more relatable to the company will make a massive impact. And also, it just doubles down on the exposure that you can bring the company as well. Like, not only are you marketing your brand, but you're marketing yourself as a brand, which really, depending on how like hard you hit like your personal brand, like still make it personal. Like, it's still a human being that's talking. But I think that it just drives the relatability factor, and personal branding in within businesses and like taking yourself will and promoting it gives so much more exposure because of the people you get to meet, in addition to, you know, the people who just meet your brand. Also, like the way that you can market on social media as an individual as opposed to a business, it's a lot easier, because if you have like a Facebook page that is like a business page, or even LinkedIn business pages, like you can only get so much mileage until it's pay to play. But LinkedIn, for instance, if you are a thought leader and you are putting out content that's yourself, the mileage you can get out of it is so much more vast. And just as a human being, as opposed to a brand, you're able to reach a ton more people. And on a more personal note, because people watch like selfie style video, which is incredible to me, well outperforms professional video all day long right now. And it hurts my video production heart to say it, but it's true. So the more you can be human, the more people want to engage. And if you can get the message across that makes you an authority, then people will want to know what you're up to, what you're doing. You become an obvious choice for them to utilize your business in whatever it is that you specialize in when they need that service.
I've been preaching, is probably not the right word, but saying anyway, for a couple of years that just as fashion has evolved to where high-low is kind of a typical thing, you know, a very expensive piece matched up with Converse sneakers, you know, kind of you get both in the same ensemble, as we used to call it, same outfit. I think content should be the same way. I think every brand should have epic content. Production values are extraordinary. It costs $25,000 to $50,000 to make the 4-minute video, but they should also have everyday content that is raw and rough, that is direct, you know, holding up the phone with your face to the lens and talking to the person on the other side of the video.
Yeah.
And that both work really well together. If you go too much into the highly produced stuff, it's expensive and slow, and also it's less relatable. I mean, we love Super Bowl commercials, but there's one of those a year. Mm-hmm. What's the company doing the rest of the time? And I think there's a huge opportunity on the other end of the spectrum for shorter, less significant, more human kinds of content. Let's break down what I was talking about a minute ago into an actual strategy. We don't do this often on this show, but okay. I think this would be a great opportunity to get really tactical for a second. Podcast guesting plus repurposing content. Let's walk through exactly how that would work. I'll start. First thing is, if you wanted to be more visible in your marketplace, I would make a list of the 10 or 15 other people that you think are your peers who you think are also more visible than you. And I would search for every place they've ever appeared. I would make a list of every podcast that your peers have ever been on. And then I would also go to a search engine like Listen Notes or something that lets you search podcasts, search the podcast universe, and look for other people in your industry, right? Then I would send a simple outreach email to every one of those podcasts, pitching yourself to be a guest on the show,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And then you actually do the interview. So now I want to hand the baton to you for a second and have you talk about, if you had this in mind, you were going to build this content machine for yourself to increase your visibility and awareness in an industry, and you're now guesting, you've got, let's say, 15 or 20 interviews lined up. How should you do those interviews differently than you might ordinarily, knowing that you're also going to be repurposing the content later?
Yeah. So like we had touched on before, making sure you can make a really great, and I don't even know if I've been doing a good job of this, let's be honest, making sure you can make a great point in under 2 minutes, which I know I ran on a couple times, but well, I'm sure we'll have a couple, hopefully. But like just being aware of that, you know, social media is optimized to be under 2 minutes of video content. I mean, realistically, 60 is better, 60 seconds. So if you can make sure you make some points quickly, then that's great. So thinking about that, is it audio or video? I mean, it doesn't matter because you can repurpose both. I'm a bigger fan of video because that visual element, I feel like catches people's attention a little bit more. Basically, an audiogram with those moving waveforms is taking audio and turning it into video. So that's still fine. And honestly, it's really not up to you if the shows that you're on are audio or video. A lot of the times they're via Skype or whatever. So you can always record your screen. So if you want that video element, you could, I mean, be sure to ask the host, like, do you mind if I do a video recording? And then another thing to think about is like, okay, maybe they may want to share these elements as well. So if they aren't super comfortable, like, hey, I share the screen because I like to repurpose these assets. We're going to blast them all over social. They may be like, yeah, absolutely. Turn that screen recorder on and let's rock. So investing in a good screen recording software. I use ScreenFlick. It's a paid one. It's cheap, but it's done a great job. It's better than like the QuickTimes can be. There's like a lot of tools you can do, like adding, if you're doing like screen grabs, you can add your face and stuff, but that would be helpful for different types of repurposing content later.
The other thing you can do is set up your phone to take a video of you wherever you are talking into the microphone, preferably a microphone or, you know, earbuds if that's what you have. But there's also no reason why you can't get another angle.
Right.
And cell phone holders, that are designed to stick with a suction cup on your dashboard can also stick on your wall or on a window nearby. Yeah. So you get one of these things for $12 on Amazon or whatever. You stick your phone in it. And even if you don't have room, like at home, my studio has a standing workstation that's in a corner. So there's no room to put a tripod behind the screen, so seeing me, seeing my face talking. But I could stick this thing on the wall right next to me. So point another camera at yourself and record yourself doing the podcast interview.
Yeah.
There's no reason why you can't do that.
Anyway, absolutely. I mean, when you start working with multiple angles, then you or a VA or somebody is going to have to, you know, mash all that together. So
of course, it
clips back and forth, but...
Or just use one of them.
I mean,
the higher produced thing says, let's do multi-angle. Let's go back and forth between the two. But you could just take one and take a clip out of it. You could also take the other and make a second clip. You're saying the same thing, but it looks different.
Right, absolutely. And who knows? I mean, you could even let, and then my nerd brain kicks on, you can A-B test those together and see which type of video got more engagement. It's still the same content, but different angle. But yeah, no, you're absolutely right. So if you can produce some sort of video out of it, great. Again, if they're like not cool with throwing the video, the audio is fine. You can still repurpose that. But those are probably like the top things you would think about as you're going to create the initial long form content, which is like pillar content is what we would call it.
So have points. In a previous life, I was a media spokesperson for a large international organization working in conflict zones in Africa and the Middle East. And one of the things that we really practiced was having three messages that we would take into any interview and finding ways to get to one of those messages from anything that we were being asked. So there's a little bit of an art and a science to this. It's talking points and bridges. The talking points are the three things you want to get across. The bridges are how you get from something else to one of your points. Oftentimes, we were being asked questions that for a variety of reasons, we couldn't answer. It would put staff in danger because we were often working in countries where the host government was part of the problem. If we were seen to be advocating the international community to impose sanctions on that government, which of course we believed would have helped, we could get our entire operation shut down and a couple million people would stop getting clean water and sanitation if we said the wrong thing on the BBC. So being very careful about that, obviously in a business context, the stakes are different, but still the same discipline. Have three points and have some bridges. Think in advance about how could I get to this from several different places?
Yeah.
Anything else you would give advice to someone who was doing an interview as the guest?
You know, realistically, I love yours knowing kind of the three things that you're going to land on at some point. But I mean, that's pretty much it. I mean, the cool part about creating the pillar content is it's not rocket science. If you're good at speaking, you have thoughts and you can back them up with like, I don't know, data, stats, even better. Have a personality. Make sure that whatever you're saying matters to the audience you want it to matter to. And then you're in pretty good shape.
If you can have coffee with somebody for 45 minutes and have them leave the conversation feeling like they had a really great time, not always because of how entertaining you were, but because of how much you listened and the interesting questions you asked, then you're capable of doing any kind of media interview. Now, some of them are higher pressure. Even though I've been speaking on the air since I was 5 years old, my heart would still race when I was going to be live on BBC World, you know, millions of viewers live. Yeah. Still nerve-wracking. But business podcasting is not that. And there's literally no reason to be afraid because you're in reality talking to one person.
Right.
Of course, if you have a great conversation, other people would want to listen over your shoulder later when the thing gets published.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've covered the interview. We've prepared for it. We've pitched. We've done the interview. Or maybe someone has already done a bunch of interviews and they're just sitting on a hard drive somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm raising my hand here at this moment. What happens next? How would they engage Repurpose House to help them get the most mileage out of that content?
There's two different ways that we approach going through your content. Because truthfully, we found our biggest churn was just people didn't have time to go through all of that content. You have a hard drive full of probably hundreds of interviews. Who's going to sit there and go through each interview and find three great clips out of that? It's time consuming. It really is. And maybe you have somebody on staff who can do it. Maybe you have a VA that does it. That's great. But for those who didn't have that and they still knew that it was something that needed to happen, we now offer like add-ons where we can do it for you. So essentially it's like if you're on one of our packages that you get one ticket every business day, you can literally have one piece of content repurposed every single business day. You can say, okay, three of those five tickets a week, we want you guys to source and then we'll just have somebody on our team do the others, whether that's because sometimes that'll be like, oh, it's stuff that is happening currently, like it's current event type stuff. So there's not like a backlog of stuff to go through. So essentially it's then like, hey, here's all of the content. Sign up for a Purpose House. It's super simple. You get your onboarding form where you go through, upload all of your brand assets. You pick templates that we've already created, or you can pick some from the web that you really like. And we just start creating your own template set. So if, let's say, for instance, you have a personal brand, maybe you have your own podcast and they have different brands, right? You can create template sets with each brand and use them interchangeably.
And by template set here, we're talking about the look of the overlays,
right,
that are going to have your content housed inside of them.
Right.
So it could be, you know, there's some margins and some graphics and maybe, you know, the logo goes here or there. Or you've also done some things with other visual elements that are more eye-catching.
Yes.
It's hard verbally to talk
about. I know,
it's
hard because it's such a visual service. So essentially, think about this. Like, if you have, you have a square video, but the top, there's a big top panel across it that has large words that are going to catch the attention of the person who's viewing it. Great ways to do that is like, how to do this without that. Those are big. One of six tips to do X, Y, or Z. Pose a question that you know that that audience is going to ask themselves, like the one mistake I'm making in my marketing, or you know, anything that you can put up there that makes people go, huh, I want to know what they're actually going to say. That's a really, really great headline. Essentially, you'll have a headline. You'll have the centerpiece that can be just the whole way across the frame. It can be inside a little iPhone. We make them look really cool. And you can pick how like crazy graphic or how simple you want it to be, because some brands, you know, like either or. And then we have really cool things like the progress bar. So one thing that is really great is whenever you're watching the video and you can see this bar that's going across the bottom of the screen, letting you know how much more video is left. Usually with like Facebook and LinkedIn, you kind of get the length of the video, but on Instagram, you don't. So you're like, how much more of this do I have before they get to the point? But there's a progress bar there that shows them, and that can be in your brand colors, whatever.
In the Instagram feed, you know it's a minute, but
right, right.
If you're in IGTV, you might not.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it does, you could look.
Yeah, I mean, that takes effort. People don't like to put forth effort when they're watching video on social media.
Humans.
Which it brings me to another point is captions, because people don't, they don't click the video to watch it. They just scroll and stop scrolling and they view it. And 85% of people on Facebook are watching video without the audio on. And 80% on LinkedIn. Like, business people aren't better. They're just as lazy. Everybody just stops scrolling.
Well, in the context of consumption really matters. On LinkedIn, especially during the day, people are at work. It's the one social network that is somewhat okay to have open on your screen in a cubicle or in an office. And yet you're not having speakers plugged in. You don't want to be surprised by audio blaring out. So for the most part, every video you're watching is probably silent.
Yeah.
So captioning videos is really critically important. But that also adds a lot to the production time. Because captioning, although these services have, you know, machine learning algorithms that will try to understand what you're saying, they're good, but they're not great.
Yeah.
Do you burn in your captions, or
how
do you?
So, and you're right. Captioning is one of the pain points, and that you can do the AI stuff. That's fine. But I am a very fast talking Italian female, and it is more comical to read what the AI came up with than, I mean, actually listening to what's being said. It does take some work to go through and, you know, fine tune it and then make sure it's timed right. It's a whole deal. For us, we go through the caption files. We actually like have a human being do the captioning. So we make sure that they are clean, they're moving along the right way. I mean, as with anything, like if you have some crazy word that nobody really knows, there may be some back and forth. Hey, this word was not proper. But I mean, that's going to be an employee who works in your office too. So it is what it is. But yeah, so we burn the and by burning, we basically put the captions on the actual video file for the square video memes. And for the story size for like IGTV and Facebook, we do not put captions on the landscape ones, because those, the only place those are supposed to live is YouTube. People are going to put them where they want, but they're supposed to go on YouTube, but we'll give you the caption file. It's a VTT file. And then we have a little tutorial on how to upload those into the YouTube video. So then every word that's spoken is searchable now via Google or YouTube, because Google owns YouTube. We basically optimized everything the way it's supposed to be done on all of the platforms. But yeah, captions are, you have to do it. To not do it, you're going to lose 85% of the potential engagement that you could get. So those are the three video templates. Then you've got your image templates. I know we touched on that a little bit earlier. Once you have those created, then it's just a matter of deciding whether you want to go through your content or you want us to go through your content. And if you want us to go through your content, we have a meeting where it's like, hey, listen, because every business is different. What content do you want us to repurpose? Is it these podcast episodes? Great, perfect. what day of the week do you want these delivered to you? Like, let's say that they have 5 tickets a week on the influencer plan. They want us to do 2 of those, right? So we're going to do a podcast episode, and then we're maybe going to do, I don't know, a selfie style video that you created on the next day. We need to go through and be like, what's your messaging sound like? What is your voice? Like, what is your audience interested in? Do you have like different messages like we talked about that you want to make sure are repetitive that we continuously touch on? It's essentially like an agency conversation, because this is the one thing we decided to do as an add-on where we didn't say no to, because we just knew that it was something that we could really bring to the table. So that's essentially like figuring out what type of content needs to get repurposed and how it would be really effective in your strategy. Or you go ahead and do it yourself and let us know. And then that's pretty much it. You submit it, and then you just start receiving these assets via Google Drive folders in our ticketing platform. And it's up to you to go and post them and explode your social media presence. And we do a lot of tutorials and how-tos and trainings on how to do it the best way possible. That's pretty much it.
One of the things that I think has been really helpful for me is to use some of the automated transcription software, which isn't good enough to then just turn around and publish, but it's really good to then make something quickly and easily searchable. I can read very quickly, I can skim, I can look. And with a number of these platforms like Temi or Descript or Simon Says, or there's a lot out there, Sonics with an X, you can upload a file, get a good enough transcription back in minutes, and then you can scan through it. And the neat thing about it is that oftentimes the text in their browser window is linked to the audio. So you can jump around visually and look and say, what did I say there? And you can listen to clips of it. And then from there, you can mark in and out points because everything's timestamped. So if you wanted to do it yourself, you could get one of these tools.
Yeah.
And you know, 7 cents a minute, 10 cents a minute, but it's such a time saver. You don't have to listen to the whole thing, or simply have the good folks at Repurpose House get inside your head enough, which actually, as I'm talking, might be even extra beneficial in a way that's not immediately obvious. We're not always the best judge of what's going to play well for other people. Something that we might be enamored of, or we like the way we said that thing, might be totally confusing to
right.
somebody else.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's definitely an argument to be made for having an editorial team outside of your own head take a look at your content and pull out things they think are interesting, they think are valuable. If they understand the audience you want to reach and the general issues and topics you want to be known for, maybe turning the whole thing over to them does have, beyond just the time-saving factor, does have another benefit as
yeah.
well, which is they can listen from the perspective of the audience better than we can.
I don't just agree with that because we'd love to do it for you, but you're right. Sometimes the way we explain things seems obvious because we say it 1,000 times a day, and then to an outsider, maybe not so much. Maybe there was another piece of gold you didn't realize you said that you can then weave into your messaging moving forward.
I'm curious about your backstory a little bit, how you got into video editing in the first place. Can you wind back the clock and give us the quick narrative of Shayna's journey to creative social media domination or whatever?
That's a bold word, but yeah, sure, let's do it.
If you're hanging out with a lot of the marketers that I know you hang out with, unfortunately, there's a little bit of excessive testosterone in the mix there. And I'm actually really thrilled by the fact that you're the CEO of a tech and content company / agency, and it's not skewing in that direction. Anyway, tell us your backstory.
Not total bro energy.
Right.
Appreciate that. Well, actually, it's kind of, I always did video production. I was the only person who knew how to work the video camera in my family household when I was like 10 years old. And I didn't even realize it, but I was actually editing video when I was young in my parents' like sunroom. My cousin and I would do these really fun like weekend, like she'd stay the night for 2 nights and we'd film all this stuff. And then I'd go in their sunroom where they had like 3 VCRs. I'd pull the VCRs from every room and I would literally edit footage. People would disappear and I didn't realize what I was doing at the time. But looking back, I'm like, oh my gosh, I was a little editor. That's great. Moving forward, I went to school for film production and I started a company that did game footage for athletics. So I would contract with hockey tournaments and we would follow around like 30 teams of these massive tournaments to all the different rinks in Arizona and we would film game footage. And this was in the days before you could do it on your phone. Like you had to burn DVDs and send them to families. Like I'm aging myself, which is fine, but it wasn't easy to do at that point. It was just something that you needed an outside company to do. And it got to a place where I was going to need to invest a lot of money very quickly because the demand was really high. And I had to like take a minute to take a step back and be like, I'm not prepared for this, like for what's going to happen. I hadn't been in business before. I worked in restaurants and I ran around with a video camera. So I just felt like it probably would have been a poor choice to invest a ton of money in not having any idea how business is run. So I kind of dove into like corporate world USA. I worked at a race school for a while and did marketing and video production for them. And while I was there, the creative director was in, he worked at a couple of massive agencies as like a really high level person in those. And I got paid to get an education in content marketing and digital marketing and graphic design. And I learned so much and became so enamored with like how you can put strategy behind, for me, initially it was making video, like, okay, let's make a pretty video, but why? And like, who cares? Where are they going to see it? The message, like understanding how the journey of somebody who's watching this piece of content needs to go. That was really, really exciting for me. Well, a lot of people got laid off from that job. So I ended up just trying to find anything. Like I couldn't get a job anywhere. I was like, I'm specialized. I have my degree. So I started to do freelance video production work for a business coach, actually. And so I was doing video and just general marketing for him. And one of the things that we did was the Infusionsoft conference. And as we're running around there, I basically had to create some hoopla over a business coach's booth. Like, how do you make that interesting at a big conference? And so as we were running around filming, like lights, camera, action, being way more obnoxious than really is necessary, but we're trying to create buzz, all of these business owners kept coming up to me and they were like, do you do video for businesses? Because we know we need it. But they either said one of two things, and it was so consistent. Either it was way too expensive and they didn't see an ROI in it, or they found a really great deal, but they got burned. Because at that point, you know, every kid had iMovie and maybe their mom invested in a DSLR for them, but like they weren't seeing value in it and it wasn't strategic. And you're talking to a person who like for her senior like capstone taped a video camera to a vacuum and got a really great low rolling shot. And I'm like, we can be scrappier than a studio with massive overhead and we can be strategic with it and try to be efficient. So
yeah, you say gimbal, I say broom handle.
Right. Who has a wheelchair? Those are great for rolling shots because the wheels are so big. But yeah, it's like, you got to be scrappy. And don't get me wrong, like I didn't show up to shoots with vacuums and duct tape. But I mean, the mentality was we can be more efficient.
What year was this?
2014.
Okay.
Yeah.
So still a little bit early in the general explosion of people's awareness of business video, although ironically, video had been the primary driver of online business content since the 2010-ish era.
Right, right.
But D-Rock is not a household word.
Right.
Right? So what happened then? So you're at this conference, so people are coming up to you asking, and you discover these two pain points.
Right.
They got burned or it was too expensive.
Yeah. And I was like, there's got to be a middle ground. And in addition to it, like why are... And not to bag on video production companies, because there's a lot of great ones, especially here in Arizona. At that point, like I wasn't immersed in that land nearly as much as I am now. But from what I was hearing from these business owners, it's like nothing was strategically based. And for me, strategy doesn't just equal like how much money can I save by making it, but it equaled like what kind of outcome am I going to get from this content? And so for me, I was like, knowing what I had learned, I wanted to make sure that the conversation that I had with businesses before we produced content made sense and that we were creating it in a way that they would actually get some sort of result out of it. That, and maybe sometimes they'd be like, I need this $30,000 crazy, like about us video. I'm like, yeah, but you don't have any content that drives people to look at that and care. So maybe we calm down on that one real quick. You do need to know, like, why we exist video. But let's create a bunch of smaller pieces of content that are about them, not about you as a business, that give them information. That's where kind of value-based content started to kick in without me really knowing it. But I was like, you got to get them to care in some capacity before you throw a 3-minute, 4-minute video at them about why you're awesome, because nobody cares how awesome you are yet. And so that's essentially like where it started. And I just created a website, just started to reach out on LinkedIn and talk to people. Actually, it was easy because people, like businesses, were like, oh my gosh, I don't have to spend $50,000 on one video. I can spend a fraction of that and get a ton of video because we're being efficient with time, being efficient with money, and we also have a strategy behind it that makes sense.
It's a really great time to be a creative because the demand for business output has never been greater. And it's also really challenging time to be a creative because you're competing against the Fiverr and Upwork marketplace where cost has been driven down. So somehow owning the middle is a challenging thing to do. Talk about your pricing strategy and how you settled on the lower middle ground.
It still had to make sense in their strategy. I mean, ultimately, we can charge you $3,000 to do this stuff for you, but more people need to be able to do this. Like, content is not something that you need to have a whole team to do anymore. And that it needed to kind of stay in line with that so that, like, Johnny Every Guy can have their content repurposed. And then, you know, bigger companies can do it at a bigger scale and be able to stack subscriptions. So obviously there was, let's look at what our costs are and figure out if we're going to make money here.
Sure.
But that really came into creating like systems and processes that made it super efficient. So for us, it was like, okay, we started really low. We started way lower than where we're at now. So it was $200 a month. And it was really our basic package, but it was like $199 at one point with no setup fee and things like that. And now we've increased that basic package and created that influencer package where you can get a ton more content. And then with the bonus, the add-ons where we can do tickets for you, it kind of increases from there. But I wanted to make sure there was an option for everybody because you shouldn't be limited by budget. But if you do, you still have to pay something because you still need to see that there's value in having this stuff done for you. And yeah, I mean, it ended up making sense. It's something that we'll tweak consistently and kind of try to play with it in the marketplace. But for now, I'm happy with where it's at and clients seem to be too.
Most business owners are willing to spend a lot more money on lead generation and sales funnels than they are on brand awareness and reputation building content. I personally think that's a mistake. I'm curious what your thoughts are on that dichotomy between branding and transacting and how you would advise people to divide their limited budget.
Yeah, it's tough because consistently reminding people that content is a long game is tough because the people who get that, it's a no-brainer. They're like, well, we will see return and value on this like over a longer length of time than the one-off like paid advertising piece that you did for spring, your spring sale or whatever. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's value in both. You need both in your strategy. But the long-form content is what's going to keep your brand awareness high. It's going to help you sustain. It's going to see, people will see you as an industry influencer leader. It's just, it elevates your authority across the board as opposed to your one-off ads that bring you individuals consistently. I mean, Gary Vee talks about it all the time. We all know that D-Rock's there for a reason. He has a team of like 30 producing content that he doesn't even ask for anything in. There's no ask in any of these pieces of content. As far as like dividing budget, I mean, I don't know what your initiatives are. I can't really say 30% should go to long form and 20% should go to repurposing. I mean, I just think that paying attention to it and making sure that it's something that you don't eliminate because it doesn't make you immediate money is something that if you're not doing yet, you need to really start looking at and seeing how it can help your business long term.
Well, and the reality is if you're not investing in your brand reputation, in your visibility, then you have no idea if it's going to pay off dividends or not.
Right.
You see other people doing this kind of thing. You may feel jealous, like, oh, well, look at them. They're everywhere and might be worth a try. As you look forward to the future, what are you most excited about as we continue to evolve with technology and business and content and creativity? What lights you up the most? What's on your mind?
Well, it kind of goes back to like my purpose and then what the purpose I've given Repurpose House for so much purpose. Oh my gosh. And that is helping people see their best potential. So for me personally, just across the board, that's what I want my life to be about. And with Repurpose House, the cool thing is that gets to be about something very specific. Like we help content creators see the potential they have in all of their existing content or even content they create and how much more they can get out of it. And that's super exciting to be able to do that in business. Like I feel like I kind of did that a little bit with Wake Brand Media, but it's so concise and like it's on the culture page, like it's there in text and writing. But for me personally, like the fact that we have so many amazing tools online that we can reach so many more people, like I'm excited to be able to start doing things personally and not just for Repurpose House that really help people do that. It's incredible how interconnected we all can be, like just through these crazy platforms that we're spending 60% of our time on these phones using, you know, it's amazing.
Speak a little bit more about that personal vision. What do you see and what do you want to do in the world?
I'm starting an event. And initially I was talking about, I was like, I want to do an event. And it was like, is it a content event? Ugh, like, okay, I'm sure people do that and that'd be great. But we've kind of landed on SmileCon. And it's basically like in any stage of your life, like there's all these different things that you could be amused in or interested in or think that could make your life better, more fulfilled. And that's kind of what I want this to be about. So you can go in and learn about meditation, yoga, how to get involved in a charity. If it's business and you want to start a business that's your passion, how to do the small, simple things to get that off of the ground. And it's basically, I want it to be a conference that fosters wanting to fulfill yourself in all of these different aspects, whether it's spiritual, business, personal. And it's still like, it's very beginning, it's work in progress. But that to me sounds way more exciting than like a content event. I mean, well, that's a part of it. Like we'll talk content a little bit. It's just about being fulfilled in your life. Like I went through a really like low point about 2 years ago, and being like an entrepreneur is hard sometimes, because especially with social media, because everybody's awesome highlight reel is just flowing through all of these platforms. And you really have to take a step back and be like, I can't compare myself to anything that's happening on all of these platforms, because that's probably their marketing person writing really cool copy, and they had a photographer following them around for 3 hours. And then, you know, who knows what their real life is like.
Yeah, every look away shot on Instagram, I think of that same thing.
It's so funny.
Here I am crossing the street, and I'm like, that's awesome. And I know there's more to this human being's life.
Right.
There's the relationships or the lack of them. There's the money or the lack of it. There's the internal unsettledness. Mental health is a huge issue that I think should be talked about much more openly, because we're all trying to grow up together, and the connections we now have through social media can bring more points of contact. And now what we got to do is turn up the truth.
Right. Absolutely. Nobody wants to talk about the hard times they have. I have one friend who's doing that beautifully right now, and he's a CEO, and his business is doing really well, but he has no problem being honest. It took him a minute to get there. He said that his, you know, gut flinches a little bit when he goes to post, but his like weekly newsletter that he sends out is always so honest. And like, I'll shoot him a text afterward. I'm like, dude, you okay? Like, I'm here to talk if you need to. It's not depressing. There's always some sort of like, here's what I learned out of this experience. But like, just the honesty is something that is so lacking on social. And I think that even though you can look at this stuff and be like, well, I know that's not the whole story, it's really hard to see that over and over and over and over again without kind of getting down on yourself a little bit. And for me, like if I can ramp up that truth and like help people feel more fulfilled, whether it's, you know, like I said, spiritual, business, whatever, like that to me is a huge win. And we have these platforms that we can reach so many people with. And that to me would be amazing.
Shayna Weisinger, founder and CEO of Repurpose House. Where do people learn more about Repurpose House and follow what you're up to, including the future of a conference focused on fulfillment and happiness?
RepurposeHouse.com is the website. Anywhere you want to find us on social, it's Repurpose House Co. Somebody snagged Repurpose House before we could. And then for me personally, it's Shayna Weisinger is the handle literally everywhere. I don't know yet where we can find the conference. We're in like super early stages finding location, things like that. It will be in Phoenix before the very end of the year while it's nice out. So we'll have really cool outdoor venue type things. I'll keep you posted on that one.
We will follow you and you'll lead the way right to it. Thanks so much for joining us in the studio today.
Thanks for having me.
For all of us here at Business Radio X, this is Dr. Adrian McIntyre, and we'll see you next time on Valley Business Radio.